So hi everybody, welcome along to Wednesday night. And for those of you online, thank you for joining us. So our topic, of course, is mindless potential. Class is sort of broken up in a number of different sections. We have our preliminary prayers, which we'll engage in shortly. Then during the class, we have moments where we can actually stop and have a conversation. You can ask different questions. There's also a part for a meditation. So let's begin. Please, you need to get comfortable in your seat. Yeah, so just adjust your posture until you feel quite comfortable. This requires that your back be straight. Check your shoulders so that they are relaxed. And have your feet sort of either flat on the floor or on a cushion. And then place your hands wherever they feel comfortable. Now your eyes can be open or closed or partially open, whatever suits you. So when you feel that your posture is good for you, then just allow the body to breathe itself. And then relax into the awareness of the body breathing itself. Feeling relaxed. Imagine that the floor beneath you is made of a starry sapphire light, which is as soft as a cloud. And the space above you is filled with rainbows and offerings. And directly in front of you, in space, sitting on a throne which has a lotus, sun, and moon, is sitting Buddha Shakyamuni. He's golden in color, he's wearing the three robes of a monk. His left hand is holding a bowl, and his right is touching the earth. And Buddha Shakyamuni is surrounded by an assembly of other enlightened beings. There are bodhisattvas and deities, solitary realizers, and so forth. The vast panoply of enlightened beings above you and surrounding you on the ground are all sentient beings. So imagine your parents are sitting beside you, friends and family are sitting behind you. Difficult people are directly in front of you, and strangers surround these four groups of people. So recollect now how fortunate you are to still be alive today. And while you live, you have the leisure and opportunity to attain the spiritual goals. You need to act quickly though, because things are not quite right, and this world does not exist as it seems to. Though this is the case, you have met a spiritual friend. And this spiritual friend is leading you in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones: the Buddha, his teachings, the Dharma, and the spiritual community, the Sangha. We've come to take refuge on behalf of all the sentient beings surrounding you. We wish to lead them in the safe direction of these three rare sublime ones. So, to make your offering of practice as purely as possible, imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity. I think that you're holding a vajra and bell. You're sitting within a sphere of great bliss. It's from within this sphere of great enjoyment you decide to take refuge and lead all beings in a safe direction. And so you say, I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In response to your aspiration, imagine that from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down and dissolve into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. These streams of lights and nectars purify negative karma and obstructions. At the same time, they increase your health, the lifespan, your virtues and realizations. So cleansed by wisdom and fortified with compassionate love, recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. Decide to develop these yourself. Establish all beings to those four states. To affirm your aspiration, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment to friends and hatred to enemies. I think that you are to actually do this for the benefit of others. In response to this aspiration of yours, imagine that from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down and dissolve into yourself and the beings surrounding you. Negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and realizations. Purified with wisdom, fortified with compassionate love, relax. And from that relaxed state of awareness, invite the field for accumulation merit, which appear. So beneath them, you say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering actually imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of a holy and ordinary beings. These remain until the end of cycle existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. And just exhale and relax. I think that you don't want to cling to your practice as if it were truly existent. And to stop any clinging, imagine that your body, speech, and mind, all the virtues you've created, all your merits and enjoyments are utterly transformed into the pure land of an enlightened being. Decide to offer the pure land to the Buddha and the entourage that surrounds him. And say, this ground, anointed with perfumes, burning flowers, the dawn of Mount Meru, four continents, the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field of offer. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Atmananda Kamayataya. The Buddha accepts your offering and he smiles at you. And you meet his gaze. So when you look into the eyes of the Buddha, what do you see? under his gaze. Recollect your wish to give up suffering and its causes, that you wish to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, that you want to find the correct view, whereby everything is empty, yet is dependently arising. In response to this aspiration, from the heart of the Buddha, infinite light rays emanate, reaching all environments and all beings. And everything dissolves into light, which dissolves into the Buddha. He diminishes in size and enters through your crown, descending down to your heart. Your mind and the mind of the Buddha become of one single nature. And within that nature, you hear the sound of the mantra reverberating. And you join in saying, Kayata The reverberations of the mantra are resonating throughout your body. You think that the two purposes are achieved. Now I think that from your heart, rays of light fill the tender rectus of space. Every sentient being abiding within the space is utterly transformed into a fully awakened state. All the light withdraws and re-enters your heart. You feel your body breathing. You know your feet are on the earth or the ground. You're seated. You can hear different sounds. You acknowledge that this meditation has been one of imagination, but it has imprinted the mind with the potential to fully awaken. Conditions are now in place. You're enhancing those conditions by studying the mind, its nature, and its function. Think that you want to do this to help others discover the nature of their mind and to learn how it functions so they can put an end to suffering and develop all of their good qualities. And then breathing in through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth, let your eyes open, and become present in this room. Okay, so let's look at what we've done. So last week we looked at some of the different categories of mental factor. And before that, we looked at all the main minds and the mental factors. We've defined mind to be clear and knowing. And we know that it's momentary, it changes from moment to moment. And there are different continuities of mind. And these continuities are called gross, subtle, and very subtle. Gross mind basically refers to our states of our conception and perception. The subtle mind is associated with dreams and deeper awareness. And the very subtle mind is the mind that goes from life to life. One of those lives you could have is a human rebirth, and some rebirths are fortunate and others aren't. If you have a fortunate human rebirth, you have a much greater opportunity to liberate yourself from suffering and its causes and to help others do the same. This is basically because delusions can be eliminated. They are adventitious, meaning they only arise dependent upon the causes and conditions that support them. if those causes and conditions are not there, and these disturbing minds cannot arise. But today we're going to have a look at perception. Perception falls under a state called a non-conceptual mind. So we're going to be looking at non-conceptual mind, but also conceptual minds. We look at their processes and why they're important. Books about this material, they're all here. The easiest one is probably The Foundation of Buddhist Practice by His Holiness and Thupten Chodron. Then a book called Buddhist Psychology with a green cover. And then Science and Philosophy in the Indian Buddhist Classics. After that, there's these other books that basically contain lots of lists with definitions, functions, and so forth. So if you've been to university or you're used to that sort of writing style, you'll be okay. If you're not, it's a little dry and you might want to put it aside. So we're going to start off with looking at perception. Then we'll look at, go across these non-conceptual minds, which perception is involved with. So we'll begin by saying what a perception is or how it's defined. It's a mental event. Perception is a mental event that can apprehend its object positively, engaging the object like as it is through direct, non-mistaken awareness. It operates through the five sense consciousnesses and mental consciousness. Its purpose is to sort of gather accurate information about the environment. There's a major, we'll come to that. So when we, I put this line up there because I think if a lion was leaping at you, you'd perceive it pretty much and you don't need to be thinking, that's a lion, right? You get it immediately. So perception is like that. And the object of a sense perception is talked about in this quote. It says here, the object of a sense perception is to be known for oneself. It is an entity that cannot be indicated with words. This includes mental perception of an object and of attachment and so on. So in other words, we go back backwards. So if we have objects of attachment, the objects of attachment are often other people, money, status, these sort of things, right? You can directly get at that with your senses. Would you agree? Like you see the objects of attachment, don't you? You see rich people, you see all sorts of things. You hear things, you touch things. That's what it's getting at. These could be objects of attachment. So we use our basic five physical senses. But then it says mental perception. So this is a different sort of phenomenon we might not be all that familiar with. It's sort of saying you can apprehend things directly with the mind. And we'll come to see what some of those things are and how that's done. But it's always known by and oneself. So a simple way of looking at this, we do this all the time. So if you imagine that you're lying at the beach and it was sunny, you would feel the sun, you feel the warmth of the sun on your skin, right? That's a direct perception. You don't sort of think, get through, you just feel it. So perception is also like direct experience. Now, what are the functions of perception? Oh, basically to gain unmistaken impressions of our external world. And then secondly, to deeply understand reality and oneself. And this is where the mental perception comes in. You can do this conceptually, of course, and we often do, we start there. But Buddhism is saying, no, you can go deeper than that. Because you have the conceptions, aren't they? They're words, ideas, thoughts. There are always an overlay on reality. And they say here, actually, you can directly perceive reality with your own mind. This is the difference with mental perception. We can also do it like, we can do it two ways, right? To deeply understand reality of oneself, you can do it conceptually through thought, thinking, and everything. That's the overlay. Or you can do it without that overlay, see directly. This is what it's sort of saying here, what perception can do. Now, conceptions cannot, you can't get conceptions through your physical senses. They don't think, your eyes don't think, Your body doesn't think, your ears don't think. They just get the data in straight up. It's conception that starts moving it all about and coming up with ideas and things like that. And hearing is saying mental consciousness can do both. It can conceive and it can perceive. This is the big difference here. I also want to impress upon you. Now, why is this sort of understanding perception important? Number of different reasons, different things you can do with it. One is to become free from mental elaboration. So mental elaboration is what? What do you think it is? Imagination, projecting inherent existence. And what's the most common thing about mental elaboration? What is it? All that is mental elaboration, right? You're elaborating on what you
Everything.
on everything. That's right. Yeah, right. So you cannot do that. But you don't have to do that. You can be free of it. And oftentimes that's what we do, right? Like when we try to relax, right? Don't we do that? Relaxing meditation, all the thoughts drop down. You become free of it. Other times we go to sleep, right? We're too tired. We've been thinking it's a long day, most of it because we've been thinking. But so if you can understand how perception can work, you can actually be free of that. I mean, we have this experience, don't we? I mean, many people come to meditation to do exactly that. All their fears, anxieties, stresses created by thought. That's mental elaboration. We're often told to just sit down there and meditate on what? On your breathing. So it's a neutral object. Well, all the mental elaboration falls away. You calm down. Now, here's the really important one, developing yogic direct perception. So yoga means is yoking two things together. So what you're yoking together here is a state of deep concentration with insight. It's called the union of karma, abiding, and insight. And when you do that, then you can get direct perception into a phenomenon, some of them being subtle impermanence. And the other, of course, the most important is selflessness. So the only way you can do this, of course, is to join these two types of mind together, deeply concentrated, firmly concentrated mind, and then bring the insight in. In the beginning, it's not easy to do, right? Because one, you've got something really stable, and now you've got something that's moving, the insight. So they've got to be brought in and gradually come together and then calm right down. So you clearly see. But clearly seeing is this yogic direct perception. You can bring it at both. Like I said, subtle impermanence is a conventional truth, but you can also move it across to emptiness. And of course, the integration of daily life, right? So while perception provides a direct experience, our conceptual thinking serves the necessary, practical way to function in the world. So directly perceiving a red traffic light, that's good, right? But not going any further in the process is dangerous. So, in other words, you just see it and no conception, what do you see? Just the red light, don't you? What does it mean? Yeah, but that's not perception, is it? That's conception. So they're both required. They're both necessary and they're both really useful. And of course, in terms of the science, parallel with science, is that the Buddhist emphasis on perception parallels modern scientific methodology. Because no matter how many thoughts you have about how things exist, it's like you've got to see that it is the case, isn't it? We just can't make up ideas and go, yeah, that's right. If we think the world is round or flat, that's an idea. Now, how are we going to find out? We actually want to see if that is the case, don't we? If you see it, it's very clear. This is the same thing with science, right? They've got lots of ideas, lots of theories, but then you've got to back it up, don't you? And it can't just stay as a theory. It's got to be a theory about the reality. Well, what's the reality? You have to perceive that. For many, many years, you had the atomic theory, right? But nobody had ever seen an atom. for years and years and years. And finally, they were seen. Yeah, okay. They exist, but not in the way we thought they existed, that's for sure. They're nothing like the idea of what atoms are like. And so now we have direct insight, and now we can say, ah, they exist, and then we can say, at least in one form, they look like this. Okay. So even in science, perception is really important.
Could just do our perception see things as they truly exist?
So when you say as they truly exist, do you mean
I mean,
as they exist in actuality and reality?
that they're empty of inherent existence.
Yes,
Perception does see that.
mental perception.
Right. Not the sensory perception.
No, none of them do.
Right.
Sensory perceptions will show everything to you as if the opposite. So our ordinary senses are perceiving the world that intrinsically exists, objectively exists. Direct perception shows us that's not the case. Direct mental perception. So,
So
the
does
word
that mean?
bliss here has different meanings. So we've got to go from gross, subtle, very subtle. Yeah. So just the meaning changes because you're dealing with not the sort of physical blisses or pleasures that or joys that we're more familiar with. It's not like that. Okay, so let's go on for next. So the benefits, now we're going to talk about some of the benefits and faults of perception. We've mentioned benefits already, and some of the faults too. So because we can perceive, because we can use our eyes function, we can read Dharma. That's real good. We can also hear it. That's really good. Yeah. This is the last one. We can recognize that sense objects are without an objective existence. You can't see it directly, but you can recognize it's the case. In fact, the Lama Song couples three principal aspects of the path, that's exactly what he says. Yeah. So that's terrific news for us. You can go out there and look at them and go, doesn't it look as if everything has an objective existence? Doesn't it look like everything's right over there? I'm perceiving it that way, aren't we? Yeah. And you should also know conception, yeah, it doesn't exist that way. That's great. We're told every day that phenomena are existing in a false way, that we always be deceived. It's good, good news. If you didn't know that, you'd buy into the appearances, wouldn't you? You'd buy into your own feelings. You are looking at this beautiful object and I feel, oh, right? I've got to have it because it's so beautiful. If you understand this, you go, that's the wrong idea. The whole thing, you're wrong. There's no beauty over there. Right? You've made it all very useful. This is what he says. Our Lama Song Kapa, and this is the great. In this, I think it's the 13th verse in Three Principal Aspects. Have a read of it. It's great. But this is where it's not so good. Right? So we sit down to meditate, and then the dogs next door start barking, or we start thinking about what's for dinner. Right? So we're distracted. But the conception distracts us from the perception. Yeah, so this is not quite a good example. But sounds, smells, all these objects of our perception can distract us from our meditation.
Someone hitting
Yeah, that's right.
you.
Someone hitting you. Someone saying you're an idiot. When meditating, right? You'd get distracted. Also, if you try to, well, again, from meditation, you can be distracted either when you're doing your analysis or your concentration. Again, all it takes is a few sharp sounds. And then if you don't have a strong ability to concentrate the mind, you will lose your object because of what you hear or because of what you smell. So it wasn't too long ago, I remember thinking. So imagine if we're all sitting here meditating, we're all going well, and then the smell of frying steak started to waft through the room, right? Yeah, so some of us might not like that, right? Oh my God, it just smells like blood burning, right? Oh, like who's doing that? But all this stuff would come up, and you lose your object in meditation and so forth. So it can be distracting. As I say, so it disturbs your concentration. So now there's a lot of material on how perception functions, but I'm just going to give you sort of a rough presentation or sort of an easy presentation. So it's always direct and it's a positive engagement. Like, in other words, so if you like this, right, just close your eyes. Like outside, something's appearing. My eyes is as black and a whole lot of white spots. Okay, you open it. So open your eyes, and it's like, wow, it's direct, isn't it? Everything's right there. It's like a positive thing. It's positive, right? There's nothing there, it's like that, and it's like it's all there. And it's like this is like we open our eyes a bit, it's a non-mistaken apprehension. All the colors and shapes have been, there's no mistake here with our eye. Awareness at this point. Of course, you could make mistakes and so forth, but we're talking about non-mistaken perception. You make immediate contact, right? This is like nothing is like immediately pop, up she pops. You can do the same thing. You do your eyes. I used to do it with my arms. You know, go like that. Nothing, 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 something straight away, right? It's immediate. And this is all it does, it just collects the data. The perception serves as the foundation for all the other cognitive processes. So again, you can try it out, right? You just sit there like that, like I said, just move one hand to other, and then like that, and then you can either rest, but you can start thinking, like, what is that? At night, if you walk around in the dark, right? You're trying to work out where things are, you touch things, you start thinking, well, that's that, well, that's that, right? So I'm here. I've got to do this thing. Yeah. This is just how the perception works. This is the sort of, like I said, the simplest way I can think of explaining it. Otherwise, you go into different types of objects and so forth, and I'm going to not do that for the moment. Yeah, the other way is quite a, it's very interesting. We need to know it because there is a difference between how you, the objects that appear to you. In terms of perception and conception. Well, anyway, I'll just stop here now and just ask you, is there anything interesting that's arisen through this material? Yes, okay, I've got Ben and Stefan. Ben, you go first. No, that would be conception.
So what's mental
We'll
perception?
come to it. That's what we're going to talk about. Yeah, we'll come to that.
Yeah, twice in definitions, you use that term positive.
Yeah.
But positive in the sense of we
Well,
like it or
no. So positive in the sense of the negative, and we'll come to the negative because that's explained in the conceptual part. And then you should be able to make sense of it. And go, oh, okay, there's a difference. Yes, I get it. Yeah.
well, is
Well,
that
one of the positive things is that the material seems to be there, like all of it, right? Yeah, and it's got all this detail to it. Yes, like that. Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah, so the positive photo's got all the colors and everything like that, and the negative is not. Yeah, and the conceptions are like the negative, and the perceptions are like the positive. Yes, like that. Yeah. So non-affirming negation and an affirming negation. Yes, like that. Affirm and negate. Yeah. So something appears to be there, which is perception. The positive side. Conception, it's what conceptions is they take away, or they strip all the data until you get a general image called a generic image. And that's your conception. Yeah. What you can do is play around with this yourself to get the experience of it. Because you'll see that, oh my gosh, it's like everything has vanished, but one thing, and that one thing is not the things you perceived, right?
when you strip the richness of the perception,
Yeah.
you can go through your life just being living very limited conceptions like this shitty coffee, that like
Yeah,
not have the whole
that's right.
sort of full. Yeah.
The full panoply of experience. And that's what connection does, it doesn't give you that. Okay, so we'll move on now to this phenomenon called the non-conceptual mind, because when you look at these texts on minds and mental processes and things, from what I've found, they don't have a section that goes, this is all about perception and this is all about conception. They put them into these different categories. And one of the categories is non-conceptual minds.
So is that perceptual?
Once we're going to see, yeah. So they are perceptual, yeah. So but they've just got a different way of talking about it and categorizing them and so forth. And the objects are a bit different and so forth. That's why they change the categories. So, like if you get punched in the face, which I like the ones that goes, it's a non-conceptual thing, right? You perceive it like directly. You don't need to be thinking, oh, I've been punched in the face. It's like a direct experience. That's what non-conceptual mind is about. So they are perceivers. So here's an object, a cognizer to which its object appears clearly without being mixed with a generic image. So generic images are what conceptions produce. A conception is a generic image. So I'll give you an example, which you can all do. So if you, well, you're all doing, just look at the chair, right? So these are these red chairs here. You can see them all around. You say, okay, there's a chair. This chair, this red chair is appearing clearly to our senses, isn't it? In terms of its color and shape and so forth, it could be described as being quite rich. So what I mean by rich is like it's got yellow or goldy type legs. The legs are sort of bent over. They're sort of soft in the bending. You can see underneath it, it's just got one little thing like this. And the seat itself, it's made of red something, isn't it? It looks a bit like velvet. It's got all these little things in like that, right? Okay. Now, just turn away and now just put your head up like this and just think of chair. Right? Now, open your eyes again and tell me what appeared to you. Okay, that chair appeared to you. Did it look like that chair?
Well, not exactly.
No, not exactly. In fact, if it did, I'd be very, very surprised. Right? Yourself? Was it that chair or just the chair?
That was that chair.
Okay.
I had a wooden chair.
Yeah, that's, me too. Yeah, me too. There you go. That's chair. The generic image of a chair. It's chair in general. It's like all the chairs you've ever known, there's this one that pops up and that's your chair, the generic image of a chair. It's never the actual chair. Right? That's the generic image. It's you know, like a general, the general idea of chair. That's why perceptions are so much richer. They give you all the detail. A conception strips out all the detail. In fact, if you go chair, so we're looking here, chair, right? What else appears? Well, the floor, the desk, all the stuff around it. When you go like this chair, what appears?
Nothing.
Nothing. That's right.
It's just floating around like something.
Yeah, that's right. There's nothing but this idea of a chair, right? That's what conceptions do. They strip out everything. They're eliminators. You get negative. You negate everything around it, and then you get a general image of a chair or of anything. You can do this all the time. If you think of people, right? Your idea of the person, like what appears? It opens your eyes to look at the person. It's very different. Yeah, it's a generic image. It's a conception. They're conceptions. Yeah, yeah. But they could be perceptual. But for most of us, it's conceptual.
So we build it conceptually.
That's right. That's right. This is the idea of emptiness, is you can't get it directly through your ordinary senses, so you have to use conceptions to build it. And what emptiness does, it strips everything out, doesn't it? You start there like, geez, everything vanishes. Yeah? But there still seems to be like a sense of me and the idea. It goes on for quite some time until the whole thing just vanishes and the idea of me and the object vanishes too. You don't directly see. Yeah, it's real fun, this. Like, you know, and you start, you know, after all I do, you end up laughing at yourself. Got it. It's such a funny thing. Right? Yeah, so these ideas, they're all the generic images. Thoughts, they're all generic images. the generalized ideas. But we often act as if they're the real thing. And we don't often discern the difference between our conceptions and the perceptions.
It's a bit like a dressmaker's dummy or a kind of like a blank mold, and it's just waiting for the detail to be put in.
Yeah,
sort of like you've got a placeholder that's this generic blank, and you're just waiting for the specifics to come from whatever situation you're in.
Yeah. So look at these divisions of this non-conceptual mind, and now we come to this thing, right? So all sense awarenesses are non-conceptual. In other words, you do not think with your eyes, you don't have these generic images with your eyes. They're positive, right? They're right there. Sense awarenesses are all like that, but the mental awareness, it can do both. It can get something directly or indirectly. Indirectly are all these conceptions or generic images. Directly are these three types called a mental direct perceiver, a yogic direct perceiver, and non-conceptual mental awarenesses are neither of those two. So I'll give you an example of each one. So mental direct perceivers. So this is a mental direct perceiver to which, say, for instance, a form appears clearly without being mixed with a generic image, such as eye clairvoyance. So this is, so you know how our eyes have only got, like, you can only see so far with the eye, right? And then the images, you don't see what's there, basically. With eye clairvoyance, you see what's there directly. So it's not your mental, it's not your physical eyes doing it. Observation can only go so far. But you see it directly with your mind. I don't know, anybody had an experience like this? Yeah, or you can say to people there and they say, oh, what's it? They often read the stories like this in the text where the person will be sitting in his cave and you'll say, such and such is coming. Mm-hmm. He won't be long, and when he comes here, make sure you bring him here. That's exactly what happens, right? Somebody's coming along, they get the words and go, oh, such and such said you'd be here. Just take a look. Yes, because that's right. Yeah. You're not seeing with your eyes, you're seeing with your mind. Before, that's right. That time we just did it. Yeah.
Because you went, oh, no, and he must have picked
it up. Yeah, another time he did that, another time too, where he said to us, he came visiting with, he wanted to take us out for lunch, right? So he came in and we were there. And then he said, are you sure you want to come? What a strange question. And I'm thinking, what, are you having me on or something? I said, yeah, sure, of course we're sure you want to come. Are you sure? Yeah, okay. So we all went off to lunch. We came back to the house and been burgled.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just a big burgle, right?
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but it's a funny thing, strange thing. I just thought that's a strange thing to say to us. But you see in the text, oftentimes, I know it's a phenomenon that does happen. In fact, I remember them training, the Americans were training people to directly see where the Russians were building their submarine bases and things like that. You know? We can train people to do it. And we could do this too, but it requires concentration. This all comes out, having a mental direct perceiver requires concentration. Because you can do it auditorily too.
Yeah,
you can hear things a long distance and see them. Now, yogic direct perceivers. So this is the idea of when you directly perceive emptiness. So you yoke these two types of mental factors together, deep concentration and insight. You have the object emptiness, subject and object disappearing to one another. You got it. That's it. So this is, I always think of this idea of Now, it's not always the case, is it, that when you're looking at... Suppose you walk into a room and you walk in and it looks like you're looking outside, right? You know, people do that, don't they? Try and build houses where they bring nature into the house, right? But there's actually, you know, it's glass there, right? But you don't see the glass, but you see nature. So emptiness is like that, a bit like this, right? You've got this object here called nature, but you're not in there because there's a glass thing there. What's the glass thing? Your idea. Then the idea falls away and you're there. Or is it like leaning up against something and something, like leaning up against the door and something goes, woof, and you're in. In fact, I remember one of the lamas talking about the realization of emptiness. He said, look, it's like going up into the sky and you've got a parachute and you're standing on in the plane, right? And then you go out. Just like that. Everything was sort of solid, and there's a me, and there's everything was solid, and then it's not. And just like that. Everything that held you back is gone. And you're in there. So this is direct perceiver, and it's done mentally. Like I said, the conceptions, they normally are conceptions, because emptiness can't be gotten out with your ordinary senses, right? So it has to be a mental sense. So, and there are like these two things. One is the conceptual side. So you have to begin there. You don't just sit there and go, there it is. Because it's an absence. Emptiness is an absence. Your conceptions are not absences. They're like real to you. Obstruction. Yeah, they obstruct the reality. They've got to sort of see through your conception, your idea. This is the idea of emptiness, and then there's the empty. And this has to be experienced. Now, the third, so this is one you might have experienced. The example of the third is a dream eye awareness that apprehends a dream object as the actual object. So remember, when you're sleeping, right, you don't have eye awareness, right? Because your eyes are closed and you're asleep. But guess what happens there? You see stuff. That's a direct perception. That's a perception. Yeah, you're perceiving things. Yeah, so they call it, the example is a dream eye awareness that apprehends a dream mountain as an actual mountain. This is not an actual eye awareness, because eye awareness does not exist during sleep. Yeah, they're not the actual image, but they're very rich and so forth. That's for sure. Now, only mental awareness exists during sleep. Therefore, dream, eye awareness, ear awareness, nose awareness. I've smelt things in my dreams that I thought were real. I've actually touched something in my dream that I thought was real. I woke up because I got such a fright.
I once woke myself up laughing.
Yeah,
that was the best thing. I wish I could do it again. I don't know what was so funny, but I was laughing out loud, and it woke me up because it was so loud.
Something?
Yeah, I was thinking, you mentioned that apprehends the dream object as a real object.
And
then I was thinking years back, my ex woke up, and in the dream I cheated on her, so she was mad at me. Yeah. That would be an example of that?
Yeah.
Ah,
okay. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just think that was, that's a good example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then sometimes, I'm asleep and I hear something outside,
yep,
and it makes its way into my dream.
Yeah.
Or like I smell fire or something. And then in my dream, I'm seeing fires, and then I wake up and the smell of the fire was, I was actually smelling it.
Yeah.
But it's like, makes, sometimes it's like confusing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Your awareness incorporates it into the dream, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's that's our interesting part. So I've got to move on because we've only got half an hour left, and we're here. Conceptions. So what is a conception? So this is a simple explanation. There are different ways of defining this, but I use this one. A thought that apprehends its object through a generic image. So we just did that with a chair. Generic image arises, and we call that like a thought of the chair. Now here's the interesting stuff. Right? So conception is mental activity that apprehends objects indirectly through elimination, exclusion, and mental images rather than direct engagement. So we open up, we have direct engagement with a chair, you close your eyes, you think chair, it eliminates everything but that one image of a chair. Does it have to be that chair? No, any chair. And you also notice, look at the detail of the chair you imagine. It's very hard to find any detail unless you sort of quite concentrate, you have a particular chair in mind. And we'll come to a little bit more about this. So conceptions operate by understanding what something is through excluding what it's not. So when you read these material, I often talk about things that are not somethings. These are two negatives. We're talking about these images. They use generic mental images to represent objects, and they work through inference and reasoning. The Buddhist sources distinguish conceptual from non-conceptual awareness, with conceptions involving interpretation and elaboration, while perception provides direct apprehension. And conceptions arise when consciousnesses engage objects through mental representations. And they often add layers of interpretation to the raw perceptual data. So here's this object we call a chair. That's the raw perceptual data. We look at it, no thought. Now the next thing is like red. Oh, it's like this, it's like that, and da-da-da-da-da-da. That's conception. All of that stuff is conception. And oftentimes, conceptions arise only milliseconds after perception. So how does it function? There's a couple of slides on this. Through an eliminative process. You're apprehending the object indirectly. Right? So like I say, is Deb there? Like I'm direct, right? Then I think of Deb. That's indirect, right? What my object I'm thinking of her is not her. It's an indirect. And it's a generic representation. It's never actual Deborah, right? It's a representation of it that I hold in my mind. All the ideas, often I was to think of it, it's like, I have a general idea of what person I know as Deborah. And if somebody asks me some questions about it, I'll have to really think, right? I've got to fill in my representation, right? But if I just looked at it, it'd be really simple. Inference and reasoning, this is conceptual material, workarounds, and you're always interpreting things, elaborating on them. Oftentimes, the conceptual mind adds more information than is necessary. You know? So I was talking to my friend, and I asked her how she felt, and she gave me this whole thing. I'm going, I don't know what you're talking about. But I didn't. Is it comfortable or uncomfortable? Hey, I get it. Okay. So it's a little, you know, I could go there, but all the rest of it, that's the liberation, that's conceptual. The overlays. Like I said, an interpretive elaboration. We're interpreting what this uncomfortable feeling means to us. And oftentimes, like how it arose, what it means, and all sorts of things like that.
Saturated.
Yeah, sure. And oftentimes if you've been with people like that, you know, and then you respond to it, they say, no, that's not what I meant. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, so again, we've taken their conceptions, we've da 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 da, elaborated, come out with our thing, they go, no. And in terms of the eliminative process, this is very true, you know. So, you know, because things dependently arise, like you think about it, it's rich. There's a lot going on, so much going on, we can't even hold it all together. So we eliminate most of it. We make it really simple. And we think, oh, that's what we're talking about, isn't it? And then often people say, well, no, not quite. And, you know, you have to elaborate a little more. But you'll never get at it directly, right? Because conceptions are indirect procedures. In fact, from a Buddhist perspective, they're all mistaken. Because they're not at it. Yeah, and even then, it's still conceptual, isn't it? So the importance of the process. So here, what I've done is got the two processes of perception and conception, put them together so you can see the differences. So perception, as we noted before, is positive by affirmation, because you just use your eyes or touch, use the senses, you know. There's no exaggeration. If your senses are functioning correctly. If they're not, of course, if they've been affected by drugs, it'd be an exaggeration. You're dealing with objects that we call real, right? They're not imaginary constructs. They often seem to be like accurate. If there's nothing wrong with your senses, then the object, your senses are getting the objects accurately. There's no integrative content. Conceptual stuff does that. That integrates the whole thing. It's just basically, if your eyes, it's colors and shapes. If you touch it, it's like hot, cold, so forth, and its tastes. They got names, but it's very basic. The conceptions can add, but they also eliminate. So conceptions negatively by elimination. So like I said, when you do the generic chair, I mean, there's hundreds of chairs, isn't there? Right? When you think of a chair, you only get one. You've negated the other 99. Right? The same thing when you think about people, right? Your ideas about people, you only get them. There's a whole lot of other ideas you've left out. You never engage the object as it is, because it's always it's an overlay. It's never real objects. They're made up. Your mind has made them up. They're always mistaken. They're mistaken in two ways. One is that you can mistake your conception of the object as the object. You're very wrong there, aren't you? And often we do this all the time. We think of people, we think of our idea of the person, and we think that's correct. But in fact, it's always mistaken. That idea of that person, that's not the person. The person's something else. I remember this when my wife died, you know. I was thinking about different things and I went, oh my God, the only idea of my wife was my idea. Like, who the heck was my wife? But it does provide integrative content. So like I said, when you know the eye's taken the colour and shape of objects, the thing is, oh, chair, red chair, that's a chair. That's integrative process. It fills it up. Now, what's the principal function of the conceptual mind? You might like this, right? The first one is, oh, have a guess. Well, no, it sort of helps in your survival, that's for sure. It does. Yeah, that's the principal function of mind itself. So conception is knowing, but so is perception.
Question.
What's the principal function of the conceptual mind? Right?
It does know. Kind of shorthand?
Yeah, and guess what? It's like this, to name things.
Ah, imputing names.
Yeah.
From.
Yeah. Because if you don't name it, you don't know it.
Yeah.
Right? Through the naming, you know the things. That's its function. And when you give it the name, think of this. You've eliminated every other name. And lastly, to find the object of meditation. So if you look at the lab room, it's really all conceptual. Right? It's all names, thoughts. We're to generate particular thoughts. Right? Our objects of meditation are conceptual. You know, like when I led you guys through, I said, you know, like imagine all the Buddhas up above you. It's, you don't see them with your eyes, you can see them, and you have a generic image of them. Often it's not very clear, but could be.
Got a comment from someone online. Is it to make sense of what we're experiencing?
Yes, conception does that. That's exactly what it does. So this is interesting. So all phenomena are merely imputed by conceptual mind in this way through the naming.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah, then we get the name. So you know, oftentimes if you've come across something that you don't know what it is, you know, so you're seeing it, or you know, you're aware of the subject that you don't know. What you often say is, what is this? What is this?
Or you give it a name, like
that's right. As soon as you give it a name, oh, that's what it is. Yeah. Right. And within milliseconds, you think that thing is the name you gave to it. And this is really good to know. So remember what a person is? A person is the I that is merely imputed to the body and mind. Person is a word, I is a word, body is a word, and mind are words. So it just merely exists. Remember that story when Lama Zopa was drowning as a little boy, fell in the river? He said, a person called Tenzin Zopa is leaving this world. Far out, man. Imagine saying that. You're quite right. But there's somebody who's integrated the teaching every day. Now, the importance of conceptions, of course, is to distinguish reliable knowledge. This is to do with this question. Yeah. It also supports our ethics and it supports meditation. There are many other phenomena that it does, of course. So, again, benefits and faults. So, like I said, it's really useful to conceive of things. Memory is conception. So we remember stuff. That's real good, useful. We can remember the Dharma, the three principal aspects. Wrong ideas, they're just conceptions. They're just ideas. You can change them. You can even eliminate them altogether. And replacing them with right ideas. This is the whole essence of Dharma, isn't it? You're finding ideas that don't work for you, dropping them, abandoning them, and replacing them with correct ideas. Ideas are sort of in harmony with reality. But also, I think most of the right ideas in Buddhism have to do with becoming free from disturbing emotions. The whole thing is really set up for liberation. You know, all these mental factors, I think that's the primary goal here. I mean, there's a lot of things the Buddha could talk about, but he didn't talk about everything, did he? Primary talk was about suffering, how to overcome it. But he used the concepts to help you do that. In terms of the faults, right, there's always this appearance of an inherent dualism. It always seems I'm here, the world is there, you're there, I'm here, this and that. It's always division. There's always two, at least two. It looks like that. So it's always mistaken that many times you think the concept you have of the object is the object, but it's just the name given to it. It's always mistaken too that the objects always appear to have an inherent existence. It's conceptual overlay. They can lead to distraction and rumination, as we're probably all familiar with doing that. And our thoughts help to create our samsara. Now we get a little bit about good thoughts and bad thoughts, or helpful thoughts and unhelpful thoughts. This is small verse called Parting from the Four Attachments. Some of you might be quite familiar with it. So it says, if you have attachment to this life, you're not a person of Dharma. If you have attachment to future lives, you do not have renunciation. If you have attachment to self-interest, you do not have bodhicitta. If grasping arises, you do not have the view. Now, all of that is conceptual, right? You got to say this is the bad side, but you also got a chance to get the right side. You can see that all these bad side, the bad side is rooted in what they call attachment, which is conceptual. Right? It's saying that these phenomena have greater properties than they actually do. You're over-investing in the property, whether it be on the negative side or the positive side. And we overestimate ourselves too, don't we? We have great attachment to ourselves, right? And then we misapprehend ourselves, right? So it's a big problem. Yeah. So we're looking at some of these wrong conceptions. And basically, if we're looking at it through the lens of the Lamrim Chenmo, or the graduating stages of the path to enlightenment, as it's presented by Lama Tsongkhapa, there are like 16 wrong conceptions. That's great to know, but there's only like 16 you have to deal with. But the fact is hundreds of thousands. But in terms of bringing about our own liberation and enlightenment, there's only 16. These are some of them. The death is the end of life. So they have a materialist type of view. No future lives, no past life. It's just this life. And after death, it's over. Karma doesn't exist. Which is really strange. Is it, does cause and effect exist? And we say, yeah, well, that's what we're talking about, cause and effect. Liberation is impossible. So then you think, oh, the disturbing emotions are intrinsic to the mind. You know, like we are sinners, right? We're done. We come into this world bad. The only way out is through the help of some deity or somebody else. Right? But basically, we're not right. And of course, others don't matter. So this idea that others don't matter is quite prevalent in our world. It's been pushed by a lot of different regimes and so forth, different political parties and so forth. But like I said, there's another 12. So of course, the right conceptions are basically just the opposite of these. So you have this idea that other lives will follow this life. So again, we need to use reason and inference of all this and not just have faith in it. I mean, I think faith or conviction is good even if you haven't reasoned it through, as long as you act on it. If you have an unreasoned faith, is always strengthened by the faith of conviction that has arisen through inference and reasoning. If your reasoning makes sense, there's no way you're going to be shaken from it. But you could be shaken from your faith. Effects and their causes are related. So here we could go, okay, so one of the effects of my life is to suffer. There's got to be a cause for it. What's the cause? So you say, well, I don't know. I said, great, Buddha does. Have a look at the text. Does it make sense to you? We've got to use reasoning again. Afflictions are adventitious. To me, this is quite a simple one. You can go, yeah, that's true. Does it ask you now, do you hate me? Right, you might go, no, so well, it's not present then, is it? Later on, if I hurt you or did something, it might arise. Yeah, see? It wasn't there before, but now it is. So it only comes and goes. It's not always there. And the idea that you decide, I will cherish others, there's got to be a reason for that. You know, so what are some of the reasons for your decision that makes sense for me to cherish others? Can that be strengthened in any way through other reasons?
Others have helped me.
Others have helped you, yeah. Others have helped you, haven't they? I mean, they've helped all of us. I mean, we've all been helped by others, yeah. Yep, we are for what, Sandy? For what, yep.
Everything.
That's right, yeah, for most things. That's right, yeah. We depend on others. Eh? I mean, all the clothing I'm wearing, somebody else made. Building we're in, somebody else made. Food we built other people. Oh, I'm trying to get any reason that you can give me that says this is why I cherish others.
Because they suffer as much as I do.
Okay, so you can say you cherish them because
they're suffering.
And you're suffering, and you suffer, and you cherish yourself, and you want to prevent your suffering and be happier. So you got to check out, hey, like, does this actually lead to me cherishing them or not? Or does it go, gee, I haven't quite put this together. What's the most simple thing they tell you, why you should cherish others?
Within our own will to be.
Well, it is in our interest, of course it is. Yeah.
To be happy.
Yeah, to be happy, yeah. Cherish. Yeah, but just try the other, go the other way. Just say, I'll just cherish myself, go to work.
Yeah.
Think that, see what happens. But the most basic thing they give it to you, they tell you, is that all beings have been your mother. Every being that you see has given birth to you. And when they do, even if they, you know, some people go, yeah, but what happened after? They didn't cherish me at all. So, yeah, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the fact that you got all your nourishment from the body of another person. That's why you're alive today.
And Cleach online says we would not survive without others.
That's right. That's true. We wouldn't. In fact, a lot of people go pretty crazy when they're not with others, don't they? Yeah, so there's lots of good reasons to cherish others. Okay, we've got a bit of time, 10 minutes. Oh. Okay, so what's interesting so far, folks? I mean, I think it's all very interesting, but still, we've got to fix something here and there. Maybe. Basically, yeah. They are. They do, don't they? Remember the babies, they're all going out like this to touch things and they're licking it, everything, right? Their data's just rushing in. And you can try and make sense of it, but they don't have any language to make sense of it. And so, have you ever heard stories of people who have not been introduced to language? Well, I have. I've read about these kids who get grown up, who grow up with animals. Right? Man, they
are. Orphans that have been
handled, like, yeah, that's right. They get, it's really, really difficult. You can't, it's very hard to make sense of the world without giving it names. It's like, you know, once you name it, like, you know it. This is that, right? It makes it simple. If you don't, it's like, what is it? In this story about, I've read about these boys, this kid who was grown up with wolves or wild dogs. So he was afraid all the time, right? So they put him in this room, and of course he just went to the corner. Like, it was, you don't, like, what's a room when you've been living with wild animals outside? You have no way of articulating it to yourself. You've just got strange appearances. Okay, let's do this meditation. So they've probably been doing quite a lot of thinking about this material, so now it's just time to let all those thoughts drop. Just come to a non-conceptual state. So how can we do that? Well, just by paying attention to the body as it breathes. The body is non-conceptual. Breathing is non-conceptual. And just drop all thoughts and rest in the non-conceptual state, aware of the body breathing itself. And notice how you can become aware of your own awareness of the body. And just resting into the present. The senses are open and aware, and they are uncluttered by projections of the thinking mind. I'd like you to just notice the simplicity of raw sensory experience. Before judgments or labels arise, it's just presence. Now, some traffic just passed by. Just notice what happens when the conceptual mind kicks in. In fact, allow the conceptual mind to kick in. What does it do? Well, names. It categorizes. It creates narratives, stories. And these are all overlaid upon direct perception. So it's possible for each of us to recognize when our own intimate felt sense of being is overtaken by discursive thought streams. It's also possible for us to release mental fabrications and just return to the purity of present awareness. Try to distinguish the non-conceptual glimpses, which are free of mental constructs, from the overlay of our conceptual mind. Notice the freedom between the perception of one phenomena and the perception of another. So it's quite possible for us to emotionally and viscerally taste the difference between these two modes of experiencing, perception and conception. For the next minute or two, I want you just to rest in the open expanse of non-conceptual being. So here the mind is like a cloudless sky, and we're resting in its open expanse. Next exhalation of breath, just make it a little longer. Let your eyes open and breathe in and as long as you are. So today we look at two phenomena, basically perception and conception. We looked at how it sort of functions, some of the faults and benefits of either. And next week we're going to have a look at the delusions. So we're going to spend at least 2 weeks on the delusions. Well, I'm just going to introduce them to you, and the next week we'll look at how we create them, or how they create and how they function. There's material about conception and perception. Anyway, check out these pages, you might see something that's useful for you. Okay, so we've come to the end of the class, so we're going to do some downloading now. So I mean, you've been here for an hour and a half to be listening, questioning, thinking, contemplating. So you're going to take all this energy and direct it towards something good. I think that through our study, may we understand the nature of the mind and work in harmony with that nature, create all the necessary steps on the path to enlightenment and become enlightened for the benefit of others. So join me in saying, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a guru and Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the Supreme Jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that goal have no decline, but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as thinking beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. So it's probably just, I think, turned 90 this year, so I want to live much longer. So the wish-granting, wish-fulfilling Jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, to be comparably kind to whom that soul I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. And for the quick finding of identification and finding of Rupa Shai's reincarnation. In holding and spreading the Buddha's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged, incomparable and venerable to you and make thank you very much. Thanks for being here. Thank you, those online.